You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Carly Fouth. Carly is a lifelong lover of moving her body and exercise and sport. But when she was diagnosed with cancer, her doctors actually told her to rest. And what we talk about in this interview is Carly's decision to keep moving. We talk about the research she found and the research she didn't find about movement and exercise during chemo, and then how it went, the good and also the not so good. And because it's me, we also talk about three-season porches and eating bugs. So, yep, that's what we do. Are you ready? I'm ready. Andiamo. Let's go. Carly Fouth, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Are you ready for a chat today?
I am very ready and excited to be here.
Oh, yay. That's so fun. All right, so I start by asking my guests what part of the world they call home. So where are you these days?
I am in Milford, Massachusetts, which is about 45 minutes west of Boston.
Oh, so back to back. It's weird to me when guests line up in synchronicities, either by topics or by geography, because I don't set it up. It's totally driven by the guest, and the person I interviewed last was also in Massachusetts. So there you have it. It's a Massachusetts pocket.
I love it.
There you go. All right. So in a second, we're going to talk about the topic of the day. But first, I want to get to know you a little bit better. Would you share with me and also with the audience a little bit about you, a passion, a hobby, something you do because it's an interest project that's not family or work related?
I love to exercise, which I mean, it kind of is related to my work, but that has been my passion ever since I was born. So the feeling of moving your body. So that is my passion. And I truly love to exercise, which some people find very hard to believe.
Very good. All right. So that actually is the topic of the day, which is choosing to be active and in motion. So are you ready to talk about that?
I am so ready.
So there is a little bit of a twist to this, obviously. And you may not know this about me. Some of the audience that's listened to the show and has known me for a long time knows that I'm actually a person who's sort of constantly in motion. I'm a lifelong runner and it's a hobby of me. Like you, I have observed that this is not the affection that many people have for things like running, but it is that. But the twist of this is that you were diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. So to kick this off, can you share with us what triple negative means?
Yeah, so there's three kinds of, when you get a breast cancer diagnosis, and this is what I thought of when I was diagnosed too, I thought you just tested positive for breast cancer or negative, but there's a whole bunch of different kinds of breast cancer you can have. So mine being triple negative means it is not hormone driven. So that means that it is more aggressive. And maybe you have heard if your any friends or family members were diagnosed with breast cancer that after they finish chemo, if they do have chemo, they can go on drugs like tamoxifen, which is something that blocks hormones, which is kind of, that's where you can get to the point where they can say your breast cancer doesn't really have a chance of coming back. Unfortunately, I don't have that option because it's not hormone driven. So that's basically what that means. It's just a more aggressive form of breast cancer, but I caught it early. So that is definitely on my side. And it just seems to be that this type of breast cancer is affecting younger people and more fit people. So I think there probably will be studies going on about why this breast cancer is becoming more prevalent. It wasn't as common about 10 years ago, but now it's becoming more common. So I do feel good. I'm very optimistic. I think any cancer diagnosis is scary, whether there's no chance of it coming back or not, it's still a journey. So I just focus on the fact that I did everything I could to prevent it from coming back again, took the most aggressive approach, and I live a very healthy lifestyle. So that helps me stay on the bright side of the street.
I can only imagine, actually. So how long ago was this diagnosis?
Last February of 2024. That's when I got the diagnosis. I had been very regular on my mammograms. I did have dense breasts, And so nothing was
As
ever
so many
found,
people
as
do, like
so many
it, for
people.
the people who are young who have not gone through this process, it's like they're like, "Hi, welcome to your mammogram. Oh, and also, by the way, you have dense breast tissue." And if you, I was very lucky that the person who did my mammogram was like, "Hey, listen, this is not unusual. Don't freak out." So I didn't freak out. But I have known dozens of friends who are like, "Ah!" And I'm like, no. This is not unusual. This is
Very
like,
common.
they should just sign us all up in advance. They should drop people out. They should be like, everybody gets two tests unless you don't need it."
Yes, everyone should get an ultrasound. And I just want to say too that if you do have that, if your doctor tells you you have dense breasts, be proactive and advocate for yourself. You should be getting ultrasounds because if you do have dense breasts, a lot of times the tumors can't be seen in the mammogram. Not to scare anybody, but just know that an ultrasound is required. That was in my case too. I just by chance was washing my armpit and my hand grazed a tiny bump that hadn't been there before. So I made an appointment with my doctor and she checked it out and she actually thought that it was just nothing. So she didn't rush any testing. I think I went 6 weeks later for the ultrasound and then that's when I got the news. Everything was like fast forward from there, but it totally took me by surprise because breast cancer does not run in my family. It wasn't something I ever thought I would be faced with because I have lived such a healthy lifestyle and I was doing everything right. But it just goes to show you that cancer really doesn't care. It really
Right.
doesn't.
And you, it, that is, I would say that that's probably a factual, accurate statement. And I would also zoom out and say that in your case, that was cancer, but that sort of reality of I don't get to control the things that happen in my future is one of the big, fake outs of adulthood. It's like if I do things people tell me, if I eat the veggies, everything will go right. And sometimes that's true, and other times it's not. And it can be really a feeling of having the rug pulled out from under you. And so that definitely happens. So it's a recent diagnosis. All right. So you kind of, my next question was going to ask you about your relationship to exercise before the diagnosis. And you kind of like already answered that a little bit. You said that you have loved exercise and motion since you were born. Tell us about before the diagnosis, what was exercise and motion like? Where did it fit in your life? Like, what was it? What did you love? What did you do?
So I played sports when I was younger. I was an athlete. I wasn't like a D1 athlete. I didn't play in college, but from a very early age, I remember going out for a run around the block with my dad when I was in second grade. And I just had this connection to how much better I felt after the run. And I kind of fed on that as I got older. It became such a way for me to deal with stress. If I was feeling down, I knew I could go do something and I would feel better. So to me, like I love sports. I think they're so important. But beyond that, I just found it such a nice thing to have in my toolbox to be able to cope with things that were coming that I was dealing with in my own life. So it became like a coping mechanism. And I just knew that every single time I moved my body, I felt better. So that is how it kind of started. And then I went to college. I had real jobs and marketing and that kind of thing. But I always had this fitness thing that I wanted to do in the back of my mind that I really didn't know how to do it. And then later on in life, I took a bar class training. And I can't say that I loved bar, but I loved teaching bar. And I love
Okay.
teaching students. And I love trying to help people make that connection to fitness that I have always had. And so that kind of planted the seed. And I grew my following and I grew my passion. And then eventually I was able to make fitness my full-time job after many years. Actually, it was just about a year before I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So it just goes to show you like life happens and you just have to deal, like take the cards that you were given and play the best you can with them. So things happen, you never,
Yep.
but everything I believe happens for a reason because since then I really feel like having that breast cancer diagnosis and going through the whole thing has only deepened my appreciation of exercise and fitness.
So, what sports did you love when you were a kid? Was it individual sports or group sports?
Everything. I think I was the girl that tried everything. So I played basketball, softball. I tried figure skating, horseback riding. I loved running, tennis in high school. I really loved. So I think as I got older, I started to really like the individual sports better. I love anything with like hand-eye coordination.
Okay.
I like the team. I love the team aspect of sports too, and that's when I stopped playing sports in an organized way. I think that's what I miss most is that built-in family. But it was just, I'm so happy I had all those experiences, whether or not, I mean, I hated horseback riding, but I'm really glad I tried it because it just, I feel like if you try a lot of things, that can kind of help you develop what you really like to do. And you can't do that unless you try.
Yes, that I would definitely agree with that. I was always very happy that none of my children fell in love with horseback riding. In fact,
Oh.
they had friends that over the years they would have friends that were doing horseback riding, and I would try and keep it a secret. I was like, don't fall in love with this. And also, I live in Miami, Florida, so like the
Oh.
hockey and ice skating are possible but very inconvenient because there's not a lot of space to do it. And I was like, don't fall in love with this. Like, just don't. Like, just like, then don't even, it doesn't exist in our world. But so that's just a little joke. But all right. So you love the team sports. You loved all of the things. How old were you? This is unrelated. Roughly how old were you when you did the bar teacher certification?
So the funny thing is, I was pregnant with my second son, and I was eight months pregnant when this bar training happened. So I was third, let me see, I was 30, I was in my upper 37, maybe. So
So
I
I
was,
call it the rule of 35, actually. I
yes,
call it the rule of
yes.
35. Whatever your hobby is at 35, somebody will offer you like a certificate or to step into the teacher position. Like, so it could be a corporate trainer, it could be yoga, it could be spinning. For me, it was running a triathlon. But whatever you're doing at 35, it's like, here's your course. And for, like, you could have been offered like 25 times before and you would say no, but at 35, sure. I'll teach knitting. You got it.
That's so true. And I also, this is part of my personality too. I was like, this is actually a good time because I'm 8 months pregnant. And if I'm terrible at it, people will just be like, oh, it's because she's pregnant. So I was like, I'll just jump into it and see what happens. And I can't, like I said, I can't say that I loved bar, but there was something that, like you said, just opened up a side of my personality that I kind of knew was there, but then I really wanted to develop.
That's very cool. That is very cool. People do love bar. I have some many friends who really do love bar. Most of them, I think, have a past in dancing.
I do not.
So yeah, like so, like people who, several of my friends who I was not a dancer growing up, but they were dancers in their youth in any of the, you know, tap, ballet, sport, whatever. And when they discovered bar, they're like, oh, this is like going back to that. They have the positive memories of dance classes and things like that from their childhood. I was actually thrown out of ballet as a very young age because I was too impatient. They were like, go across the hall and jump on the trampoline. I was like, yay. So, all right. So you shared with me on the intake form that you were given a 16-week round of chemotherapy. And at some point in here, you were given instructions from your doctor that you should maybe rest instead of exercise. What happened? How did this connect, this motion thing connect to your diagnosis of cancer?
So this is the part, this has become my passion too, because when I was diagnosed with cancer, I had just launched my fitness business and it's just me and I teach all the classes. And I thought to myself, how am I going to do this? Going through a double mastectomy and going through this chemo thing that seems like it's going to be awful from what I've heard. How am I going to
People
have the
do
energy?
not say good things about chemo.
No, it's terrible. But I was like, I have to work. I don't want my business to go down. I'm going to have to find a way. So I went to my oncologist and I said, like, you obviously know this is what I do. She thinks I'm nuts in a good way. How am I going to keep doing this? And she told me, well, Carly, it's going to take a lot of your strength. I don't know a lot about exercise during chemo. There are some studies coming out. But here's a book. It was called Moving Through Cancer. And so you might want to read this. So I read the book and it gave me hope because for the first time in my life, as far as chemo goes, the author talks about how exercise is something you should be doing through chemo, and it is possible to move through chemo. So I read the book, and then I said to myself, you know what? I'm gonna make it a goal that I am going to exercise every single day through chemo, and I'm gonna teach all my classes. I'm gonna try. My goal is to try. If I can't do it and I have to say like I feel too sick today, then so be it, but I'm gonna give it my best shot. And so that I made it my goal, and that is I went by the book, and it just so happens that the whole method I created for my fitness platform before I had cancer was this get fit in 15 minutes
Okay.
method. And then I realized from the book that the whole idea was just try for 10 or 15 minutes. And then if you can't do anything more than that, that's a great base to start. So I had already built this base that went along with the book. So I was like, this is actually perfect. I can do this. So my own platform that I had built before cancer is the thing that truly helped me get through this because it helped me get back from my double mastectomy faster than the doctors would ever think I would be moving. And it also helped me be able to teach and stay in shape and hold on to my muscle mass during chemo. But it was not easy. Like
No, I can't imagine.
no,
Yeah.
there were days where I didn't even know how I was going to do it. It really took mental strength more than the physical strength to be able to say, like, I'm going to try because sometimes I couldn't think and I wanted to cry. But what I started to realize was no matter how bad I felt, is if I could just go for the 10 or 15 minutes, I felt so much better after it. So it was helping my side effects, it was helping my nausea, it was helping me feel, it was helping me get more energy. The resting was the thing that was making me feel worse. I'm not saying you shouldn't rest. I think
Right.
there needs to be a balance, but I think that the doctors telling you, and they told me all throughout chemo, if I would call and talk about a side effect, they'd be like, well, have you ever heard of something called rest? And the anger, I was like, yes, but thank you very much. My symptom is okay. Now I'm going to keep moving. And then it passed. So I think there needs to be more emphasis on movement as well as rest.
Well, you mentioned that there hadn't been much research about chemo and exercise. And I think that I'm totally the wrong person to hold myself out as an authority or an expert on that. That's the tip of the iceberg here, right? There's like very little research on so many of these things. There's very little research on women overall. In so many of these positions, there's very little research on the impact of movement in women. I mean, it's really actually very modern that women have been moving, right? It's really actually very modern that humans have been moving as a form of exercise as opposed to survival, right? Like if you go back 125 years, people were not going to gyms. They were just cooking and doing laundry and walking upstairs and, you know, they were living, right? There was no, right? There was, life was harder then. I think about this every time I see women out wearing weighted vests for their walks, right? So, which is not to say that that's a bad thing
I know
at
what you're going to
all.
say. I know
It's
what you're going to say.
just, it's like a statement in how inactive and lazy modern humans have gotten that we have to
Oh my goodness.
introduce the fierceness into a walk. It's like, wow, life has really become very, very easy. And so there's no research on any of this. There's no research on any of it at all. And so that creates this weird, or actually very little, there's not much research. And then that creates this like weird paradigm where you've got experts, right? And they are experts. They've gone to school, they've studied it. These are the people who are giving the prescription, giving the diagnosis, telling us what to do. But who knows if it's right? And so, yes, we rest when we're sick and our body needs to heal, right? That's how we recover, like from anything, right? So that definitely makes sense. But our bodies stop functioning when we stop moving in so many ways, which I think is really recent that people have given that weight. It's like things like arthritis and inflammation and respiratory things. The idea that it's the movement that helps us move that through is really, really strange that that's so new. But yeah, I mean, and it is definitely right. There is a point. There's a. I am not the person who should be in charge of telling people to stop moving because I never tell myself like that's like the I make that mistake. But it's hard to know where is the line. Like when is the movement beneficial and when is my health so poor that I need to Rest. And I think that one thing that I would say is I don't know that the person who should be advising that is somebody else. I think it has to be driven from inside the person who's doing it.
I think that that is where experience comes in. I think that that's why it's so important to start to build a connection to fitness when you're healthy, because then you build that confidence and that mind-body awareness. So if something does happen to you, like a cancer diagnosis, you know your norm. You know when it's time to rest. You don't need somebody to tell you. You know inside, okay, enough is enough. I need to relax a little bit. And you have the confidence. Because let me tell you, when I went to the after my double mastectomy and I went back for my checkup and I told her what I had been doing, she was like, "What?" But then she looked at how I healed and what I was able to do at that point, and she was like, "I can't be mad at you because you're healing great and you can do things I never thought that you would do." And that was because I knew my body so well, because I had put in years of getting to know my body so well.
And that's true. Like your story is with cancer and with recovery and surgery and all of the things like that. That's also true for people who walk into a group fitness class like Orange Theory, Sweat 440, 40, F45. They're going to ask you to do things you may never have done, and you won't know if you don't know how your body feels when it's healthy, you don't know how it feels when it's unhealthy, you don't know how it feels when you push it too far. Like, and so, which is not to say you've done anything wrong. It's just say that's the learning curve. It's like, hey, like people, I remember the first time I got like a bike fit and the guy was like, so how does this feel? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I mean, like, what is it supposed to feel like? I've never done this before. Like, and he's like, fair enough. All right. So, I want to ask you to, we've been talking about cancer. We've been talking about this serious thing. We've been talking about all these things. Whenever I talk to somebody who's got a health diagnosis, I do like to ask them, and this is kind of a personal question. You can tell me to buzz off. You describe yourself as a cancer survivor, but I want to give you a chance to talk about your status and your prognosis and how you're doing, just because I don't want to leave it as like an unknown for the listeners who might worry about you.
Oh, that's so nice. No one has to worry about anything because I am doing great. Going back to what happened during chemo, my oncologist told me that I would come back at 50% of my strength when I was done with chemo, and I had it in my mind. I was like, I don't like 50. I'm going for 70 to hold on to my strength. So by the time I was done with chemo, I definitely felt the toll it took on my body, but I did a triathlon 2 weeks after completing my last chemo treatment, and since then, I mean, it's taken me a little while to rebuild where I was pre-cancer, but I got back to where I was quicker than I would have if I didn't move during cancer. So now, I mean, I'm just living like I go every 3 months for blood work just to make sure everything is okay. The chance of reoccurrence drops after 6 years. I think I have to wait like 6 years, and it drastically drops to almost zero. So I just live my life in 3 month increments, but it's not like I'm sitting here biting my nails, stressing out about it. I think I just live my life day by day, like everyone should, whether you have a cancer diagnosis or not. Nothing is guaranteed for anyone. So if anything, this journey has helped me appreciate life in such a deeper way. I'm not saying I'm in a great mood every day and every day is hunky dory and rainbows and butterflies, but I know that every day is valuable and you don't get that time back. So I'm doing great.
It's a crazy thing because we all know that, right? It's like one of those platitudes that's always out there, like nothing is guaranteed, everything is there. But, and I would say it's probably, you probably do have an undercurrent of that all the time because you do have those 3 month tests. Like it's always in the back of your mind. You're very used to it, but it's so easy to forget. It's so easy to settle into that idea that, yeah, everything's going to be like this forever. Everything's going to be totally fine. All right. So the doctors were telling you to rest. You're a lifelong mover, so maybe this didn't happen to you. When you began to prioritize movement when you were in recovery, how did the people around you react? Like your support team, were they supportive? Did you get people who were like, I don't know, Carly, like maybe you should rest? Like, what were some of the things that people said to you?
So I have this platform that I said that I built before I had cancer. So I had this group of about 40 women who are in my group. And I have to give them so much credit because they all stood by me. And I heard after the fact that there were some conversations going on behind the scenes that were like, well, we should tell Carly that she doesn't have to teach us and we can do the classes on demand. And there were about th there are three people in the group who are very, very good friends with me outside the group. And they were like, we know Carly. Trust Carly. Like, let if the worst thing we can do is try to tell her what to do and try to take control when she's losing so much control over everything else in her life. So I really appreciate that. There were always people that were telling me to rest and like, are you sure you should be doing that? Even my parents in the beginning were a little leery, but then everybody, I think that everyone who was close to me started to see how much that was helping me and that they could trust me in what I was doing. And then they backed off and they were just cheering for me. And my husband, when I read the book, Moving Through Cancer, I made him read it too, because I said, I need you to know about this. And I also need you to know that my goal is to move at least 15 minutes a day. And I need you to know that on the days when I'm sitting on the couch and I'm staring off into space, and if I say I can't do it, I need you to tell me to put my sneakers on. Like, I need to trust you that you are going to be my coach and push me with love. And he said, okay. And I had his support. I couldn't have gotten through it without him, because there were days he had to just say, put your sneakers on, just try.
And so,
So,
and did you have
yeah.
like a, did you have like a safe word that was like, okay, so tell me to put my sneakers on, but if I say no, then I'm in
I
charge, or
didn't.
no? Oh, you didn't. Okay.
No, I didn't, because I knew I could do it. I know, because I had said, I'm someone like, I always looked, I kind of like demonized chemo and cancer. And so like, I had to win. Like, I could
Okay.
not let cancer or chemo beat me. I do have a very competitive nature in that
Shocker.
regard. I was like,
That's a
you will
total
not
shocker.
win. You will not win. So,
That's a total
yeah.
shocker.
Yeah.
The so yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So when we talk about what you were doing 10 to 15 minutes of movement with your sneakers. Can you give us an example of what that might mean on a day where you felt good and what it might mean on a day where you didn't feel good?
So I'll be clear, there was never a day where I stopped at 15. I used
Okay.
15 as a benchmark. So usually, like I said, when I got to 15, I could go 15 more. So with that being said, on my worst days, I went outside and I walked. But I always had that 15-minute class I had to teach. So sometimes that was a stretch class. Sometimes it was a HIIT class. Sometimes it was a cardio class. It all depended on how I was feeling. I did a lot of strength training too. So for me, strength training went from trying to lift heavier weights to just really trying to lift any kind of weight, because there were days where I felt really weak and I knew like, okay, so I'm doing 10-pound weights feeling so bad, but this is the equivalent of somebody else lifting, a healthy person lifting 50,
Yeah,
because I
because
was
your body, stress is stress. So your body was already under a lot of
And
stress.
chemo eats muscle. So I knew
Ugh.
the chemo was eating my muscle, and I was becoming depleted from my muscle. And I knew the only way to fight that was to keep some resistance training there.
Yeah. No, it's it makes it's I am a person who yeah, no, I am not a person who will elect to do strength training like
Me neither.
on
I
my
don't
own.
love it. I
But
don't love it.
I like and I require a little bit of peer pressure to do specific things. I made a joke recently. I was like, I just did my first burpee in like 3 years, like, which means I wasn't the way I it wasn't my choice. Somebody was like, do a burpee, and I was like, fine. I hate them, but okay.
Yep.
All right. So working on movement for yourself is not the only thing you were doing. You launched a podcast from your chemo chair. In a minute, we're going to do the final questions and so on and so forth, but I want to give you a chance to talk about what you do. You've talked about building the platform that you've done. Talk about your podcast. Talk about what you're doing. Share with people where they can find and connect with you online.
Yeah, so I started a podcast my first day of chemo, which ironically is a year ago tomorrow. I went
Happy
into
anniversary. Do
thanks.
we? Okay,
Yeah,
there we
it's the anniversary. I
go.
call it the anniversary of the beginning of my podcast, because I
Okay.
looked at chemo as my podcast day. I went into my chemo and they didn't know who I was, and I was like, I'm going to do a podcast. I didn't ask permission, and luckily it turned out okay, because I proved to them it was a good thing. But yeah, I started my podcast from my chemo chair, and then I have continued it from my kitchen, and I've been getting great guests, survivors, caregivers, doctors, some celebrities, athletes, just trying to get people to talk about cancer and not be so afraid of it. Because, like you said, this is something that's going to be happening more and more, unfortunately. So I think it's important that we try to talk about it and take the fear out of it and know that not every cancer diagnosis is a death sentence. You can still live a very happy life having gone through cancer. I wrote a book during chemo too. I had all these thoughts going through my head. It's called Pray for the Bear. If you see me in a fight with a bear, pray for the bear.
Okay, I was
Which I
like,
got, I got that published, and that's on Amazon. I still have my platform, the community that I call it, the Fit Fun community, still going strong. I have a website, Fit Fun Carly, and that's where all that information is. And now my big what I'm really trying to push forward with is the whole cancer exercise thing. So trying to help cancer patients understand the power of moving and that rest is important, but moving is just as important. So I'm trying to push through on that too. Everything's on my website, Instagram at FitFunCarly. And my podcast is called Chemo Coffee Talk, and it's on Spotify and YouTube. I have to push it out to the other platforms, but I'm so busy. And it's just me. I need an assistant. But eventually I will.
no, I mean, it's there are no rules. Like
No,
you
you're
could,
right.
people can find you wherever they find you. That works for me. That is a lot. I'm trying to imagine. I've never sat in a chemo chair, but I'm trying to imagine what the nurses would think as you
Think
walked in. You were like, "Hey, by the way, I'm going to record
I
at this podcast here." For anybody who's listening who is very interested in the things that Carly was saying, but you are yourself moving, because a lot of people listening to the podcast are on a walk, they're in their car, on a treadmill, whatever it is you might be doing. Those links are in the show notes, which they're there. And also, the easiest way to get them is to be a subscriber at imperfectadulting.com, join the email list, and then I send them right to your email box, and you just click on them and go through there. This is a very inspirational story, and it aligns with my life because I believe that motion is very helpful, but it is still today not something that we tell people from a young age. And I actually love that you use the word motion because and movement, because I find that that's much more approachable for a lot of people than the word exercise, which sounds like gym class. And then the other thing that's interesting is there's a flip side to that. People who are lifelong exercisers, sometimes they poo-poo movement in the form of walking, right? And walking is this like amazing. This amazing thing that is so good for us, and we should all like embrace it because we should be able to do it forever. All
Right.
right. Well, that's not entirely true, but for the ambulatory people, that's true. Okay. So now, are you ready, Carly, for the final three questions?
I'm ready.
Don't be scared. They're just for
Okay.
fun.
Okay.
All right. All right. So when my kids were little, they had a school fair where you could get a ticket for eating a bug. And so my question is, what is the most unusual thing you've ever been invited to eat?
Oh, that's a I'm an eater. I love to eat. So, okay. So I lived in Spain and it was brought two things. Can I say two? Am I
Sure.
breaking?
There are
Okay.
no rules. I'm in charge. There are
Okay.
yes.
Okay.
Go.
Cow tongue. And which this isn't that uncommon, but it's like blood sausage. But I know a lot of people in Europe eat blood sausage, but to me, like sausage filled with blood, those are the two most interesting things I've eaten.
But that's the thing with food. Like, it's very normal for some people to eat things, but if you stepped, two steps to the left, people are like, "What?
Yes,
why
yeah,
would you
a
eat
little odd.
that?" So
Yeah.
exactly. All right. Do you play board games or online games? And if so, do you have a favorite?
I hate games.
Okay, that's an answer. So no.
Oh yeah, sorry. I really don't
It's
like,
good.
do not like board games. I do like rummy card
Okay,
games.
so
I like
like
rummy.
card games, yeah. All right, very good. I one of my kids does not like games and was therefore a terrible game player and a really, really poor sport about it. I still remember the day I was like, some people don't play games. And she was like, really? And then from then on, when the games would come out, she's like, I don't like games. And it was like totally empowering to her. And we were all like, yes. Go, you go be you boo, right? All right. So, fun question to close out the interview. If you won the lottery, like $10 million or more, like a huge number, $10 million, $100 million, what's the first thing you buy for yourself?
Oh. A screened-in porch. I want one so bad. But they're so here in New England, I think it's key to have a screened-in porch because it gets so buggy at night.
Yeah.
And I always dreamed of a screened-in porch, but that they're surprisingly expensive. So I
All
know
the
that's
good
such
things are.
a boring answer. I
I mean, the
know.
best things in life are free, but the really, really good things can sometimes be very expensive.
Yeah, so like that's such a lame answer, but yeah, screened-in
Why?
porch.
No, I love it. No. What do we call that? A three-season
Yeah,
porch?
three, yeah. Sounds very domesticated, but that's my answer.
But then you can be outside and the bugs are in their space.
Right.
I've got a lot of love for bugs. I just want them to stay outside.
100%.
That's my, I know they're important to the world. They can
But
be
I
over
don't
there.
need them on me. So yeah.
Very good. That's it, Carly Pfau. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.